Welcome to the Real Docs Podcast, hosted by Dr. Britt Lesher and Dr. Lisa Jung. Dr. Britt and Dr. Lisa are two licensed naturopathic doctors, passionate about all things health and wellness. They are on the mission to break down wellness trends, variety of conditions with a naturopathic and holistic lens. Tune in every Wednesdays for new episodes. This podcast does not act as medical advice and should not be used as a substitute for medical care. Please contact your healthcare professional for questions regarding your health.
Welcome back to the Real Docs Podcast. We are your hosts,
Dr. Britt Lesher
and Dr. Lisa Jung. This is season one, episode eight. Wow, we are breezing through this. Mm-hmm. So today we are actually going to be talking about allergies because it's spring. Spring has sprung.
We're sprung.
So, you know, I'm pretty quite sure a lot of you out there are probably feeling it. I am actually feeling it as well. So we're going to talk about all things allergies and even, you know, naturopathic and natural approaches to allergies.
Yeah. This is one of my favorite topics because I used to be that person that every allergy season I was on some sort of antihistamine. I mean, I had asthma when I was growing up and a lot of it was triggered by allergies to environmental allergies. So I think this is one thing that I do tend to see pretty frequently and more prevalent now too, right? One thing that I do highly recommend that people do nowadays is to actually go get an allergy test. And many people have actually done the allergy like skin prick test. But I actually have this funny meme. I don't know if we can insert it, but it's like, went to get an allergy test and it's this girl swollen up, like huge welts, huge hives, her eyes swollen shut. And she's like, turns out I'm allergic to a lot. Oh, right? So it's like every time patients tell me that they go to get a skin prick test, it's either one of two things. It's either I reacted to everything and I'm allergic to everything, or I know I have seasonal allergies, yet the test showed up negative. Mm. So I have been doing different, instead of recommending that people go get a skin prick test from their allergist, to have people actually do a blood test, the like ImmunoCAP. It measures, you know, IgE antibody levels in response to certain environmental allergens, and they actually have different areas across the nation. So each area is designated with a number. I believe Pacific Northwest was like Area 17 or something like that.
Area 51.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like the Pacific Northwest is probably like we practiced in Washington for a couple of years, and I feel like allergies were so prevalent there. Yeah.
It's really crazy too, because, you know, kind of like what you said with different areas and mm-hmm. regions and things like that. Even when you look up regions or tests for, you know, Quest or LabCorp, they will kind of quantify, maybe not quantify, but they would kind of separate it for those specific regions, right? Because certain places have more of like certain trees,
yeah,
or certain flowers or certain, you know, critters like mold and things like that. And mold, yeah. Seattle was super, you know, prevalent for that.
Yeah.
Versus down here, you know, I would actually say we have more of like the cotton trees or olive tree. I don't really know if anybody was really allergic to olive tree. Correct me if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. Olive trees are very prevalent down mm-hmm. in Southern California, even a lot of flower pollens because we do have a lot of wildflowers.
Yeah, here. That's true.
So smoke.
Yep, fire. That's true. I mean, I feel like when there are certain environmental events like the fires, people can notice an increase, an uptick in their allergy symptoms during those times. And yeah, I think a very important piece of understanding your allergies is knowing what triggers them. So highly recommend asking your provider for an allergy test. If you can, ask for an allergy blood test rather than the skin prick test. I highly recommend that. I like it because with the skin prick test, you have to avoid all antihistamines. With the allergy testing, the blood testing, you don't. So that's one thing that, and I do like to see like the severity of it. Mm-hmm. With the skin prick test, it's being interpreted by the person administering the test. So you essentially, they prick your skin and they see how allergic you are based on the size of the hive or the welt that forms. And then that is measured by the person administering the test and you're given a score for severity.
It's very subjective. And yeah, if I remember correctly, because I don't know if you did this during mm-hmm. residency, but my first residency, we did the slit testing.
Yeah.
And the testing end of things was using skin prick method in the office. But oftentimes, even for me who was doing this for a lot of patients, I remember thinking like, it's so subjective.
Yeah.
Because I can say, you know, maybe this hive is 5 millimeters wide, mm-hmm. but someone can say, oh, it's 7 millimeters yeah. wide. And depending on, you know, I think if I remember, it was in certain ranges where that kind of quantified the severity.
Yeah.
Even just that difference in someone saying it's 5 versus 7 or whatever.
Yeah.
It's different in terms of interpretation too. Yeah. Right? Where I can say, oh, it's not that severe, but someone could be like, oh my God, you're too severe.
Mm-hmm.
And it really also, I don't want to say messed up, but it changes the approach for treatment too. I mean,
right.
For that one, it was for slit immunotherapy. So it wasn't as different because mm-hmm. you would just, you know, slit, if y'all don't know, it's a sublingual immunotherapy. And the idea is basically pharmacies, compounding pharmacies usually, or certain brands would formulate these sublingual liquid drops that a person would basically administer for, I want to say like 6 months to like almost a year, a
couple months,
to bring up their tolerance to the allergen, because you're slowly building the load of this allergen for your immune system to encounter and kind right. of quote unquote react to. And you know, I don't think it really changed the formula per right. se, maybe like smaller doses mm-hmm. or shorter versus longer duration, but it didn't really change. But let's say we're going about more of, you know, antihistamine therapies or supplements or lifestyle or something like that, it would kind of change
yeah.
the aggression, but how aggressive we would be for that treatment versus not.
Right. I do definitely see too that at least when it comes to slit therapy versus like the, I guess the traditional comparison would be the allergy injections. There's such a variation in terms of like its success rate. And so oftentimes, you know, I have heard from patients like if they've gone to get the injections, and I mean, they are injections, right? So it's definitely a lot more invasive than putting something under your tongue. And I do notice that a lot of times people don't necessarily prepare their immune systems for going through some sort of immunotherapy, which is maybe why we see such a discrepancy in the success rate. But I think that it is something, especially if you have severe allergies, something you can consider. And now they do actually have companies that will work with your insurance provider to get it covered, because I think previously was, at least when we learned it, it was very much an out-of-pocket cost to get slit. And so that is definitely one of the more like conventionally based therapies that are out there for allergies. Another thing that I like to test and just have people be aware of when it comes to allergies are certain nutrients that are needed for, just an adequate immune system. So vitamin D, vitamin C, sometimes even like a copper, zinc or something like that can vitamin be very, a. yep. Vitamin A, like there's so many nutrients that people are deficient in. I feel like when it comes to immune regulation. And we were always taught that allergies, if we're looking at the immune system, we're looking at the immune system as a bucket and allergies as being like an allergy load. So how much you actually have in your bucket, and nutrient deficiencies that affect your ability to break down histamine or detox or even fight off pathogens that come into our system to stabilize your immune system. I mean, there's so many things that we need in order for all of that to work properly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like when it comes to allergies, there's so much, and you know, not just allergies, but just in general, so many different conditions and different right. illnesses, ailments. There's so much that goes beyond just what that is, right? So like mm-hmm. nutrient deficiencies, you know, I really love the bucket load. I really like the bucket load analogy because it also gives people the visualization of like, oh, I am this bucket and how full am I? You know, how close am I to having like an anaphylaxis reaction? Mm-hmm. Hopefully not, but mm-hmm. you know, I think it's really good to use in terms of putting that depiction for people, but mm-hmm. let's kind of dial it back. What would be, you know, this is Dr. Britt's probably one of her many but great specialty focuses when it comes to immune system, autoimmunity, you know, that sort of field. So what would you say are kind of the common signs and symptoms of someone having any sort of allergies?
Yeah, so I mean, I think the one that I see most commonly in many different people is usually the seasonal allergy, hay fever. You know, a lot of people have the allergic rhinitis, the like constant sniffles, constant sniffly nose, you know, itching, itchy eyes. It doesn't necessarily need to be just the eyes. It can just be all over the face. Some people just have like itching literally in their nostrils too. And that's probably part of why they're having that. You know, we always think of those people that are like always rubbing their nose. I think too, there is an overlap with people who have more of like the food allergies, right? Obviously we know a lot about like the anaphylactic reaction, that severe allergy reaction, but there are people who have even more milder symptoms of food reactions that can be considered allergies, like oral allergy syndrome, where you get your itchy tongue, right? You just feel like your tongue is going to fall off really from itching. But I would say also too, the allergic conjunctivitis is something that I've seen in so many different forms in people, from the most severe to people getting like the swelling in the eyes, you know, bumps that develop under their eyelids, to just, you know, even just the watery, constant tearing, and the, you know, sandpaper feeling in their eyes. And then I also see the ranges of people who have like the hives that pop up, the rashes that pop up, right? So, I mean, it can show up in different forms for different people. But usually if someone is having generally some of those signs, then my ears are perking up for some sort of like allergy load. And I'm asking about, have you ever had allergy testing done? Do you know if you have any allergies?
Yeah. I love all of that.
You want to add to any of that?
Yeah, I'll always add. one, you know, when it comes to allergies, I feel like most people know what that looks like, whether it's like them experiencing it yeah. or someone they know who are like, yeah, like that's the allergy kid, yeah. you know, something like that. But I feel like some of the symptoms or signs of allergies that people don't really recognize or, you know, even realize that mm-hmm. that is part of your immune system or allergies, encountering sort of some sort of allergens, like nausea. Mm-hmm. I think the oral allergy syndrome is like really big, because like people will be like, oh yeah, my like gums and my like cheeks, right. inside of my cheeks feel itchy, or like, you know, like little like tingly, prickly, mm-hmm. same for throat, same for tongue. But even kind of like beyond that, like nausea, sometimes vomiting, diarrhea, or just a lot of like stomach upset can also be discrete signs of allergies. Even in, even in anaphylaxis, right? Someone is like their throat's closing up, that kind of sort of scenario. Sometimes people don't have that like category or depiction of the classic my throat's closing up and I'm swelling and whatever. They can have the kind of the opposite when it comes to like the gut upset and those signs as well. And I feel like one big thing that we've always been taught when we were in school, and this is pretty common in kids but also in adults as well, I feel like we've both probably seen it in our clinical days, still now we still practice
back in our clinical days.
Yes, back in our clinical days. We're retired. No kidding. Is the darkening underneath your eyes, especially, what do we call it? Like allergic shiners or something like that? There's a whole nother name of something, something sign, but I'm just going to call it allergic shiners.
Yeah, I think we would call it allergic shiners. Yeah.
So just kind of like this like darkish bluish brown color under your lower eyelid.
Isn't it caused from them like rubbing their eyes?
Something like that. Yeah. So I guess it's like almost like a little bruising. But yeah, I kind of remember something also like on top of either the rubbing, but also something more underlying that causes that, but I can't remember. So I'm just going to put it.
Yeah, I'm glad that you touched on all of those other signs and symptoms too, just because that brings up a really important point about why people are developing or having these allergy symptoms. And a lot of it is due to the robust histamine release that happens when our immune system encounters something that it considers to be an offensive thing, right? An enemy, just something that's trying to harm the body. And it's different for a lot of people. Sometimes people are born with these allergies. Like, for example, we don't know why people develop like allergies to peanuts or robust allergies to bee stings or whatever it may be, if there's an anaphylactic allergy there. But what we do know is that when our body encounters those things, it releases all of these cells that eventually will end up releasing histamine. So a lot of the therapies that we see now commonly are antihistamines, right? The Benadryls, the Zyrtec, the Claritins, the, you know, all the over-the-counter Allertec allergy medications that people are taking. And while I do understand that allergies are very bothersome, because I've definitely dealt with allergies and it's like, oh, somebody just take it away. It's like, you're going to just crawl out of your skin, you know? And I definitely understand like the need for something to work. I just think that how people react to their allergy symptoms now is to immediately suppress it instead of to ask themselves like, what am I actually allergic to that I'm being exposed to right now? And how can I better prepare my immune system so that it may not be as reactive in the future?
I feel like that's such a beautiful way to also say that too, because down the line, especially if we go down into more of like colder months, fall and winter or flu season, having those, you know, cold flus or even, you know, the other virus that I can't
really the say, C word.
The C one. You know, I feel like people who have more inappropriate immune response or immune system have more likelihood and risk of getting recurrent illnesses, you know, and having more of a hard time or even longer time recovering after cold, flu, whatever. Right. And speaking of the other virus, I feel like especially what you said earlier of we're now starting to see a lot more of immune reactions, right? Allergies and things like that for people. there's a lot of studies that are now kind of coming out from the pandemic where, you know, we were covering ourselves with hand sanitizer and you know, in the acute setting in those situations, it made sense, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody tried to, you know, wash your hands, hand sanitize, wear masks and don't go outside and that kind of sort of stuff to prevent any sort of spread and prevent any addition to the death toll or, you know, cases and things like that for our society. What's really interesting though is that a lot of these studies are now saying, well, from those sterile practices, we are now seeing a lot of immune reaction and immune inappropriateness, if you will, because for what, like 2-3 years that we've been in that, our body, especially our immune system, hasn't been able to encounter your kind of the normal allergens outside and things like that, that they normally would every year to start building up their immune system, antibodies, things like that. And then for 2-3 years, your body's like, oh, we don't have to worry about those. Great. Like we don't need to do anything. And then all of a sudden, you know, encounter it and your body's just like, whoa.
We're all just like thrust back into society and exposing ourselves to everything again.
They're like, it's back. We gotta attack it like harder.
That makes a lot of sense. Cause I always explain like our immune system as being our army. And just imagine if our army didn't train for 3 years, how resilient we would be when we came out of that. Right.
Disorganized, messy. I love that. I always tell people, I'm like, yeah, think of your like immune system as like your soldiers going to war.
You need to train them. Yeah. You need to, and we develop our memory cells, right? So we remember, you know, how to fight off certain things. So I like the idea of training your army, giving your army the resources it needs to function properly, instead of, you know, giving it an antihistamine and making all of our soldiers fall asleep, because that's essentially what those, you know, the Benadryls and now we know, like with the first and second generation antihistamines, I mean, a lot of the first generation antihistamines are like your run-of-the-mill Benadryl, like the Vicks NyQuil, all of those things that people are taking for cold and flu that are like that are knocking them out, right? Because we know that the first generation antihistamines have that effect on our brains, which helps it to be antihistamine. It's an antihistamine, but it also is anticholinergic, so it is sedative. It's a sedative. The thing about the second generation antihistamines that a lot of people are using, it still has that antihistamine effect. And while it is more recommended and they say there's no long-term side effects of it, there's just something about turning off the histamine signaling completely that doesn't feel good to me. Like I said, it's like you're essentially putting all of your immune cells to sleep, or giving them a break a little, which, like I said, definitely is necessary and needed for people to feel relief. Cause living with allergies when you're in the thick of it is terrible. It's a nightmare. So I get the need for it, but we're going to talk about some maybe natural things that you can be aware of. One thing I do like to even just say, it's not even a therapy, but now that you're aware, you know, after getting tested, now that you're aware of what your allergens are, try to avoid exposure to it. A lot of times they're coming from inside your home. People are allergic to the dust mites and cockroach, you know, cockroach poo-poos, mouse poo-poos, yeah, you know, mold, like moat, moat poo-poos. So test your allergens and look inside your home, because that's where you spend majority of your time. I mean, I sit here and I'm just like looking in my apartment and I'm looking at my air purifier. I know that there's an air purifier in my office and in my bedroom. Like filter the air, because that's where you're spending a lot of your time, right. Especially because I know I have a dust allergen, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Every time I'm dusting, cleaning the house, I'm sneezy galore, right? So I know I need to filter those things in order for me to feel better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what's really also important is that, let's say you're allergic to something outside. Obviously,
let's cut down all the trees.
You can't do that, or you can't be locked up in your house for the rest of your life. But when you're going out and coming back home, making sure, you know, you're not wearing shoes around the house that you wore to outside of the house, that you're not tracking all those allergens back into your house and, you know, on your bed or anything like that. I feel like that's also why Brian's like, no outside clothes.
But, yes,
you know, all of that, you know, air filters are really great ways to filter what's in the house or what's coming into the house, making sure that you are changing your filters. My house is guilty of this because I don't know how to change our air filters because my husband had it before me, uh-huh. and I need him to change the filter. So I need to practice.
Get your husband to change the filter.
John!
John, change the filter.
I asked him last week too, and then he's like, I'll do it, and we never did. So,
and taking the plastic wrap off of the filter inside of the air purifier. Oh my
gosh, that is like the most like horrifying thing I've ever seen. I'm just like, so you mean to tell me like nothing has been filtering? It's just a plastic bag that it's been sucking on. Like, so yeah, change your filters, you know, clean regularly. You know, you don't have to clean every single day, but maybe every week at minimum, just so mm-hmm. that you are getting rid of these allergens, mm-hmm. you know, inside your home or something coming from outside, things like that.
Can I just add one more thing about the house yes. before we move on from the house? I'm sorry, but the people who have dust allergens, you cannot have carpet. Like, oh, I know they say to vacuum and all of that. No, you're going to have to rip out your carpet.
Yeah, that's where
you should rip out your carpet. I'm telling you.
Dust mites live.
Yes.
And then, you know, on top of that.
That Dyson ain't sucking everything. Nah. You know.
No. You gotta rip it off. Band-aid.
Yeah.
But, if you also have, pets at home, right? Like, mm-hmm. now the pet dander, even if you're allergic or not, that starts getting collected into the carpets as well. And then, who knows? Maybe like years down, you might actually start being like, wait, I'm allergic to my dog or my cat or something like that.
Yeah.
Because again, you're filling up your allergen bucket.
Yes.
And your load. And then your immune system's like, oh, okay. I guess I need to like fight against this thing. So yeah, in terms of going back to the antihistamines really quick. You know what's so interesting with the first generation, like the Benadryl, mm-hmm. diphenhydramine, is that I think you put it really nicely, like it's an anticholinergic. And if you are taking these medications every single day, I hope not, you know, because how are you driving? How are you working? Maybe, you know, in the daytime, but even in nighttime, right? It's like, we're going to put you to sleep so you won't feel your allergies. And that always was really funny to me because it's like, oh yeah, if I sleep, I can't feel anything.
But, get your priorities straight.
Yeah, but you know, not only are you now developing dependence to the medications, mm-hmm. when something is anticholinergic and you're taking it every single night or whatever, you're also depleting your levels of choline in the body. And choline is very important for your brain, your cognition, like so many different things. So if you know, for some reason have to be on diphenhydramine forever for the rest of your life, make sure you're getting good sources of choline so that you don't go depleted or deficient either.
Because I think that there are actually research that's correlating Benadryl to dementia now, which is crazy.
Yes.
Which is crazy because I know a lot of people just use Benadryl just for the sedative purposes, not even for the antihistamine effects. But for whatever reason, that people are using Benadryl for sleep and they're finding more cases of dementia. So really important to be aware of the medications that come with, you know, treating these things and the side effects and the potential long-term effects of being on these medications, it may seem, you know, these allergy pills are these like tiny little things, and you feel like, oh, I'm just taking this tiny little pill every day and it's not going to have any lasting impact on my health. And that's just not the case.
Yeah.
So I feel like this is a good segue into natural therapies that we utilize for patients to help with allergies.
Yes. One quick note. I am guilty of taking Zyrtec every single day because I'm a hiver and we have a cat, and both my husband and I
have. You tested? Are you allergic to cats?
I've never gotten tested, funny enough. Mm-hmm. My mom has always told me when I was younger, uh-huh, that I'm allergic to pet dander, and I don't 100% believe it because I feel, uh-huh, like that was her ploy to basically say we can't have pets.
Oh, I see.
So I don't know. With dogs, I don't really react to dogs, yeah, if I remember correctly. Like, maybe I'll get a little itchy and things like that, but mm-hmm, nothing too crazy. Cats, I would say same, but I've never really had a lot of, like, dogs and mm-hmm cats in my life until I started being with my husband mm-hmm and seeing our cat a lot. And then I was just like, oh,
yeah. Your load is going up.
I feel it. Yeah. You know, so I do take Zyrtec every single day because I live with the thing that
that you know you're eating.
But I always have this like weird, that's not weird, it's guilt of like, I need to do something more, and I do, but I feel guilty sometimes of taking Zyrtec every single day. But at the same time, it's better than me scratching my entire body.
That's what I was gonna say.
24/7.
It's like you kind of have to pick and choose your battles. I think in those, like, because I have patients all the time who have pets that they know that they're allergic to, and it's just a matter of, you know, trying to reduce your allergy load and trying to even, you might even want to consider getting slit for just cats. Yeah. You know, this is one of those things where single immunotherapy sometimes works even better than trying to cut down all of your allergies to all of outside.
Yeah.
Right. Cause we know what it's coming from. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not getting rid of my cat.
Yeah. A catectomy.
I love him. You know what's so funny? Actually, while we're on the topic of cat, this is something really crazy. And I think I told you about this.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes with allergy and cross reaction sometimes in people's body. So I hope John's okay telling me this, but anytime, I remember since I've been with my husband, like even when mm-hmm we were dating, he would always react to pork.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes okay, sometimes not. It was kind of this weird, you know, off and on, but we did figure out that it was pork.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, well, maybe you just don't have enough enzymes to break down fat. But here's the thing is that whenever he eats, you know, fish or beef, those have higher fat contents than pork, he does completely fine with this.
Mm.
But it's always pork that he reacts to, that we always kind of pin it down.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just really interesting. And one day, I don't know what got me to down this road, I just started kind of looking up, why would someone be allergic to pork? And, you know, tried my theory of, is it the pancreatic enzyme, like lipase and things like that? No. And then somehow I get down to this research of pork cat allergy syndrome. And
you did tell me about this.
I was like, what is that?
It was mind blowing.
Insert Cardi B reaction here.
Oh my God, what is that?
I look into it, and in some cases, someone can develop pork allergies because the peptide in pork protein looks similar to the protein peptide that's in cat dander. So then your immune
system. That's gnarly.
Yeah, your immune system starts being like, oh, like this looks like cat, and this guy is allergic to cat, so we're going to start making antibodies to it, but in reality, it's pork peptide, pork protein peptide. So then people all of a sudden, as the immune system, you know, does its job making antibodies against the allergens and things like that, they'll start reacting.
That is
the other thing.
The wildest story ever.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's just an ode to how smart our immune system is.
Yeah.
And why we should like really work to empower that, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of putting it to bed.
Yes. Yes. It's like your immune system is like what we said, like soldiers and like military, let's say. And it's like that kind of like that kind of discreet wild work is like the CIA.
Yes.
Something like that, where
the FBI.
Yeah, it's just like
we're gonna figure you out.
It's crazy. So that was my little plug of
I love that.
Things that can happen like that.
Anyway, it sucks for John because he can't have pork.
He'll still have it here and there. We'll just, you know, we usually just give him some natural.
But we love Fufa, so we're not getting getting rid of Fufa.
He's my son. He's my son. I can't get rid of him. So, you know, there's other things that we can do on top of our daily Zyrtec that we're doing that's helping the immune system, right?
Yes.
So sorry to insert that, but again, I think this is a nice segue, like Dr. Briss said, of talking about natural approaches and therapies that we can do. So what would you say it's like your top favorites
go to?
Well,
I think first I'm always checking for the nutritional deficiencies and replenishing that. Vitamin D is something that I see prevalent in so many people. We're not getting enough vitamin D from the sun. Even if you live in places that are sunny, you know,
Southern California.
Exactly.
I see so many people who are vitamin D deficient.
And I think it's for a lot of different reasons, and we'll probably save a whole nother episode just to talk about vitamin D. But fixing your nutrient deficiencies, whatever that may be, vitamin C, vitamin D, zinc, copper, like all of the things, right? And then from there, we can talk about our, what we call histamine stabilizers or mast cell stabilizers that, stabilize the release of histamine in response to allergies. Those things, a big one is quercetin. Quercetin is, it's a flavonoid that's commonly found in like apples and onions, but when taken can help to kind of stabilize that histamine response. That's a really big one that I tend to use in my practice in varying dosages. And then I think for a lot of people too, just being aware of like the herbal, the herbs that can be very helpful in being considered antihistamines. One example that I like to give is stinging nettles. Everyone always knows stinging nettles to be very helpful as like a mast cell stabilizer and very helpful for allergies. Nettles is actually on the Pacific Northwest allergen test. People are taking nettles and they're allergic to nettles. So just another plug for testing, just to be aware of.
Yeah, I think that I'm so glad that you said that, because even things like, you know, sometimes what people use for immune support is like calendula, right?
Yeah.
But even calendula, it's in a certain Asteraceae family of herbs. And if you have any allergens to or allergic reactions to maybe a different flower or plant that's in that same family, likelihood of you being allergic to calendula is high.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't want to put something in your body that's going to cause more reaction versus actually testing and finding out, oh, you're allergic to this, or I'm allergic to this. I'm not going to, you know, take nettles or calendula because I'm going to be allergic to it.
Right.
So,
yeah. And then the other things that I kind of focus on, depending on the people that need it, is the antioxidants and liver detoxifiers, the NACs, the glutathiones, right? Because those things are going to help your liver in actually breaking down histamine and detoxifying it from your body.
Yeah, I love that.
Please add.
you know, when you talked about nutrient deficiencies, is one of the common things I also see is low omega fatty acids.
Oh, yep.
And,
amen.
You know, I understand generally we don't eat a lot of fish in the diet. I know some people love salmon. For me, I'm Korean, so I love eating mackerel, even though it's really fishy sometimes. And, you know, I feel like there's not a lot of good amount of fats that go into diet, especially even when people start doing more of like weight loss or macro counting and things like that. I feel like fats always kind of get like the back burner of like, you know, being left behind. It's kind of sad. But fats and omega fatty acids are so important because it's also that membrane barrier of these mast cells that release histamine that you also want to give them a little nice support so that they have, you know, nice thick walls and membrane and things like that. And it's super great for anti-inflammatory and immune support and all of that. I would say vitamin C and quercetin are probably my favorite as well. And then bromelain.
I love bromelain. Yeah, yeah.
As long as you don't take it with food, otherwise you're just using it as a digestive enzyme at that point.
Yep.
But it's super great. I would say probably those are my go-to. And then just underlying support-wise, I think like nutrition in terms of getting in a lot of vitamin C-rich, antioxidant-rich foods. Sometimes I do more of like, this kind of goes like half and half and it depends on the person, would be like bone broth because it's immune supportive. But if someone has high histamine intolerance or that sort of a depiction, I usually don't recommend it because bone broth is thought to have a lot of histamine in it because it's also, if you think about it, it's like bones with bone marrow that's being extracted out, right? Now, within that bone marrow can be mast cells with those histamines that are kind of coming in. And this is my personal opinion. I don't necessarily believe that. Also, if you're cooking for something for so long in a higher heat, you're kind of denaturing these compounds anyways. But some people do have histamine intolerance reactions to bone broth. I haven't really seen that many, but it could happen. But I would say if someone is relatively okay and they can, you know, do fine and they just want general immune support for allergies or, you know, just fighting off any recurrent illnesses and things like that, I would say bone broth is probably a good one too.
I love bone broth. I love bone broth. I like that you add your like your gut specialty to all of that because we do know that there are a lot of cases of gut related issues and histamine intolerance making, you know, allergies worse. So it's a very important piece of the puzzle.
And 70% of your immune system actually comes from the gut. So
yeah,
don't forget the gut.
Yeah. Don't forget the gut. Yes. I definitely think that, when it comes to a lot of these, nutrients, a lot of it that we talked about are the things that you'll probably end up taking orally. There's obviously for those people who have like chronic allergy rhinitis, I do usually will recommend, you know, something a little bit more natural, like I use one, it's actually a Manuka honey base, aller cleanse. And, I know obviously a lot of people will use like the Flonases, the Afrins. We know those decongestants, you develop a dependence to it. As soon as you stop, it's 10 times worse. So try not to use those. You try not to use the decongestants, like the Afrin sprays and things like that. The Flonases are definitely corticosteroid based. So again, putting your immune system, your soldiers to sleep, which definitely relieves the symptoms, but it doesn't treat the underlying cause and doesn't train your immune system. So that's why I usually will recommend like do the neti pot, do a xylitol spray base spray, or like a Manuka honey base spray, something like that. You can do regularly without developing a dependence to it and feeling good about knowing you're not putting your immune system to sleep over the allergies.
Yeah, I think that's so important that you said those, because with Afrin, we know you get rebound congestion as a side effect. And with Flonase, it does have a little bit of steroid in there, right? And steroid is great. I don't want to like demonize it because we do need it for calming down acute inflammation. But if you are using it for a very long time and, you know, depending on it, then that's also down the line suppressing your immune system, which then you are just in a vicious cycle, right? I love the xylitol ones. Mm-hmm. They're so great. You can find it at any pharmacies now. Even just honey based or some mm-hmm. sort of like bee product. Just don't use it if you are,
oh, yeah.
you know, allergic to bees. you don't want to find that out. I know there's one that's like propolis based. Where do you get the Manuka honey based one?
It's by a company called Manuka Guard, I believe.
Is it like at CVS? I feel like
to be honest, the ones that I use are always through like a prescription, through FullScript and things like that. I haven't really looked outside of that, but I'm sure it's called Manuka Guard. I haven't looked to see if it's available elsewhere, but they have like different levels of different sprays, and I've found them to be very like helpful in helping people to even decrease their Flonase use or just, you know, even getting off of doing Flonase or their, decongestants, whatever people are using on a regular basis. Yeah.
I want to ask you this because mm-hmm. speaking of the xylitol mm-hmm. nasal spray, there is one on the market. We both love the product, but there's one that's the extra strength that has capsicum, mm-hmm. which is, if you don't know, it's the spicy agent in cayenne pepper or just, I guess, any spicy pepper. But mm-hmm. how do you feel about that?
Capsicum. And I think we also learned about like people using horseradish. Or like, you know, like the hot mustard.
Oh, I love horseradish.
Yeah. I think that most people, in my head, most people wouldn't tolerate. I try to use things that I feel like most people will want to tolerate. Because the idea of even just like explaining to a patient that I want you to use hot pepper in your nose is
like, what is going
even
on?
Even though we do know it has a lot of, it does have a lot of like positive properties, I do this thing in practice where I'm like, if I know I have better tools, I won't even bring up the other ones. Yeah. Like I know which ones like tend to work for people, but that is something that is commonly found in, you know, not commonly found, but it can be found in products. So
it's so funny because I've never used it. And I, you know, with capsicum and mm-hmm. cayenne pepper, it does. Do you remember when we had that one botanical lab
yes.
in school?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Cayenne and some other things in the eye wash, and then people would do it. And then they're like, oh yeah, like it actually like, you know, it burns a little bit and then it gets better. And mm-hmm. I was just like, that's great. I wouldn't, I don't think I would do that. And you know, we wear contact lenses. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I don't want things like sticking around there. Even with like cayenne and capsicum, it does bring blood flow to mm-hmm. either where you apply it and things like that, right? As well as it depletes substance P. So then if there's any sort of like pain and discomfort, it could help. Mm-hmm. But I always just saw it and I was just like,
why?
I don't understand. Like and it's so funny because people would be, you know, I would recommend the xylitol spray. And
yeah,
just get it on Amazon or you know you see
like we have such like other better like very effective yeah. agents yeah. But those are
asking, they're like, should I get this one? I'm like, no.
Yeah. I think that there are some things where like natural medicine sometimes takes a turn and you're just like, but why, you know? I mean, I get it
yes.
but
yes,
I am not going to recommend it.
Yeah. Actually, speaking of horseradish too, I used to use that a lot, mm-hmm. not just in allergies, but in people who are having either sinusitis, like
oh,
sinus
yeah.
infection, or just a lot of that congestion, right? Mm-hmm. We know, you know, you eat like a big dab of wasabi, it just clears
Opens you up,
right? But, you know, back in my first residency, they had mm-hmm. a whole tincture bottle, and one mm-hmm. of the things that they had was horseradish.
Oh, wow.
So I always thought that was really cool, and I was like, well, we can just get wasabi from the, you know, the store or whatever. But, you know, real wasabi is actually expensive. But
yeah.
Anyways, I would put it in the formula because uh-huh. what's crazy is that horseradish also is a good source of NAC.
Oh, what? Yeah,
and we know with NAC and, you know, any of that congestion, mucus, you know, things... Mm-hmm. NAC helps to break that down, and we call it a mucolytic. So I would be like, oh, let's just put it in there. And then they're like, why is it spicy?
Why is it spicy?
And I was like, hey, don't worry about it.
I love that. There are so many. I'm like just sitting here now and I'm like, there's so many things out there that people can try. Obviously, like us talking about these things, we're not your doctors.
you know, don't just go and try all of these things just for funsies, and just talk to someone about it. If you are interested in learning more about like natural ways to manage your allergies, consider seeing somebody who, a naturopathic doctor or an integrative provider that has these tools and can talk you through it. Cause obviously there's so many little like pros and cons, disclaimers, nuances to every single thing that we've talked about today. And so I think it's very important, again, just to add that disclaimer for people. I know that it all sounds great when we're talking about it on the couch, but you do have to like make sure that you're being safe about this.
Yes.
So.
Yes. And allergies, I feel like, is one of those things you don't really want to mess with, because mm-hmm. the other dark side is that if you start having allergic reactions and things like that, it could be dangerous and even like
severe.
Yeah. And so, you know, what might work for one person might not work for you, and vice versa. So that's so important to talk to your provider. And I feel like that's also like the pillar of naturopathic medicine, right? Yeah. It's individualized, personalized medicine and plan, because every person is so different.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of it.
Yeah. And hopefully by listening to us today, you realize that even if you didn't realize it before, that there is another way mm-hmm. to deal with your allergies. There mm-hmm. are other therapies besides what you're doing currently, yes. right? Yes. So,
and uncover what you might be allergic to, find out, investigate, and then implement plans as you need yeah. to, as appropriately. So that is it for episode 8 on allergies and everything in between. I hope you really enjoyed this episode. Give our podcast a like, 5-star rating, leave reviews, be nice. And let us know in terms of either YouTube or just in the reviews or on our Instagram and TikTok what you would like to see from us next. We're always, you know, interested on what you guys are interested in, because for us, we can talk on and on about everything and anything in between. But if it's something that you have questions on, and obviously everything's going to be anonymous, we're not going to be calling you out, minus our husband and fiance, but that's what they married into. But yeah, let us know what you would like to see. We'd love to give you the input of what our opinions are, what our experiences are like, and open that whole conversation.
Yay!
Be real.
And stay well.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Real Docs Podcast. Don't forget to like and share this episode, and follow us on our social media pages. Tune in every Wednesday for more episodes.